Good morning. This is Neil Strasser with the CBS World News Roundup. No terrorist group has yet claimed responsibility for the kidnapping of two American businessmen on a road near El Salvador's capital yesterday, nor has any word been sent whether the two, Dennis McDonald and Fausto Buccelli, were injured in the shootout, which left their Salvadoran bodyguard dead. Both men are employees of Beckman Instruments Company of Fullerton, California. The deposed Central African Emperor Bokassa, who styled himself after Napoleon and has been accused of ordering the massacre of schoolchildren in his country, is trying today to choose his Napoleonic form of exile and running into resistance from the French. Bernard Redmond reports from Paris.
The much-denounced former sergeant-turned-emperor was ousted by his cousin in a coup d'etat Thursday night. He spent the night aboard his personal Caravelle airliner on the runway of a French military base 60 miles west of Paris, guarded by French troops. Bokassa created an embarrassing problem for the French authorities. They didn't want him here, although he holds dual nationality and his wife and son live here. Bokassa was initially refused asylum because of what informed sources called his atrocious record on human rights. Bokassa's plane was allowed to land yesterday at Evreux Military Airfield only when it began to run short of fuel. A detachment of French troops was sent to the Central African Empire at the request of the new regime to help maintain law and order. Bernard Redmond, CBS News, Paris.
In London, British officials see a major advance in the talks on the future of Zimbabwe-Rhodesia. Agreement by the government of Prime Minister Muzawewa to a draft constitution that would strip whites of their veto power. The response of whites in that African country, reported by Robin Wright in Salisbury.
Whites in Zimbabwe-Rhodesia generally reacted with caution today about the agreement between Bishop Abel Muzawewa and the British government on a new constitution for the troubled territory. The new constitution eliminates all special rights of the whites, including a parliamentary blocking mechanism. The Rhodesia Herald, a white-run newspaper, said the bishop acted boldly and generously, but it criticized him for not obtaining, in return, a guarantee that economic sanctions would be lifted. The small white community, outnumbered 25-1 by blacks, appears to be far more concerned about whether Patriotic Front guerrillas will also agree to the terms. Observers believe whites would, in the end, welcome the Constitution if it meant an end to Zimbabwe-Rhodesia's 14-year-old constitutional crisis and 7-year-old war. But many whites today express serious doubt about guerrilla acceptance. Robin Wright, CBS News, Salisbury.
The first response from spokesman for the Black Patriotic Front in London was negative, the guerrilla leaders still insisting, apparently, that they want their forces to take over control during the transition to any new government in Zimbabwe-Rhodesia. After a brief stopover in Tokyo, former President Richard Nixon is flying home from China this morning. Nixon saying that Peking wants to form a united front with the U.S., Europe, and Japan against any expansionist power in the world. That's a term the Chinese generally apply to the Soviet Union, but Nixon said they were not necessarily talking of the Russians, but any expansionist power. More on the Nixon visit from Bruce Dunning in Tokyo.
The former president said he found relations between China and the United States progressing faster than he could have expected in 1972 when he first visited China, though not as well as he might have hoped. But he said the interests of the two countries make the relationship permanent, not to be affected by the outcome of the 1980 United States presidential election.
I believe that regardless of what happens in the elections of 1980, that whoever is the next president, be it President Carter or someone else, that the Chinese-American relationship will continue to grow because the process is irreversible due to the fact that the interests of both countries, economic as well as national security, are deeply involved.
Mr. Nixon would not reveal any details of his conversations with Chinese leaders, Premier Hua Guofeng and Vice Premier Deng Xiaoping, but he characterized Hua as a world statesman, now more confident than he had been when Mr. Nixon last visited China in 1976. Bruce Dunning, CBS News, Tokyo.
For the Russians and Cuba, a slap in the face last night at the United Nations. Richard C. Hartlett reports.
The General Assembly last night defeated a combined effort by the Soviet bloc and Fidel Castro's new radical wing of the non-aligned on the issue of Cambodia. This question goes beyond that sad little country. It's an aspect of the Soviet-Chinese struggle for influence in Southeast Asia and in the developing world. The Russians went forward on two fronts. They proposed that the Pol Pot regime be thrown out of Cambodia's seat in the assembly and replaced by the Heng Samrin group, now in power in Phnom Penh. They argued that Pol Pot's brutality had cost him all popular support and that he controlled no territory. China and others replied that Pol Pot had been overthrown and Heng Samrin installed by a Vietnamese military invasion, and they argued that the United Nations could not condone and reward aggression. As the Russians lost ground, they threw their strength to the alternative of leaving Cambodia's seat empty, something Fidel Castro had succeeded in doing at the Havana Summit Conference of the Non-Aligned. But the United Nations is not Havana. Here, the moderate non-aligned nations that had been squelched in Havana could demand an honest vote, and they used this power to strike back. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
Tired, dizzy, and happy. That's the way Bolshoi ballet dancers Leonid and Valentina Kozlov described themselves in an interview printed in this morning's Los Angeles Times. The Times says the two defectors from the Soviet dance company denied that the prospect of more money was behind their decision to seek asylum in the U.S. before the Bolshoi returned to Moscow. Leonid Kozlov told the newspaper, "We want to try modern dance to express ourselves artistically in different ways. We want to explore new directions." North Korea today accused the U.S. of what it called a grave military provocation. The communist regime objecting to what it says was an overflight by an SR-71 spy plane on Thursday. North Korea's Communist Party newspaper said grave consequences will follow if the U.S. does not discontinue at once all the hostile acts. It came just in time to smooth the arrival here in Washington next Thursday of Mexico's president, and U.S. officials insist the cost to American consumers will be modest. More on the deal to buy gas from south of the border from Nelson Benton.
The U.S.-Mexican natural gas agreement sets the stage for about 10% of Mexico's current production to be piped to the United States starting probably in January. The price is well above that of domestic natural gas, but competitive with the price of foreign oil that it will displace. The Carter administration says the natural gas shipments from Mexico will amount to less than 1% of U.S. natural gas consumption, but that's still the equivalent of about 50,000 barrels of oil a day. U.S. officials view the agreement as a substantial energy development, but they find greater significance in the renewed cooperation it could signal between the two countries. Nelson Benton, CBS News, Washington.
An undersea earthquake centered some 5 miles offshore shook the Big Island of Hawaii during the night, but there have been no reports of damage or injuries. And scientists say the quake apparently did not generate a seismic sea wave. It was measured at 5.6 on the Richter scale, the strongest registered in Hawaii in nearly 4 years. In the upper Midwest, it's a case of five down and a long three to go in the effort to get grain production rolling again. Rich Holter of CBS radio affiliate WCCO Minneapolis has the latest.
A fifth grain company has reached a tentative contract agreement with the striking Duluth Superior grain millers, but that leaves three companies to go before any ratification votes will be taken in the 12-week-old strike. The latest settlement is with Archer Daniels Midland, and while some sources indicate it may be the key to a final agreement, Federal Mediation Service spokesman John Rogers cautions against any such speculation.
Each one of these is a separate set of negotiations, I think, that must be emphasized. And I don't want to paint the picture that because there's a settlement with one company, there'll necessarily be another. But we're certainly going to work at it.
The ADM settlement comes amid growing pressure for an end to the strike. Some shippers are threatening to pull their waiting grain ships out of Duluth Superior if there's no agreement by Monday. And agricultural officials report grain is piling up on the ground at elevators and on farms throughout Minnesota and the Dakotas. Rich Holter for CBS News, Minneapolis.
Carter administration efforts to get the Rock Island Railroad rolling again are at a standstill at this point. Strikers have thus far defied the president's back-to-work order. And in the meantime, a federal judge has ruled that no other railroad can take over operation of the line because the Rock Island still has enough cash flow to remain solvent. Teacher strikes affecting some 800,000 students still continue in a dozen states. Negotiations are underway in two big school systems in Detroit and San Francisco, but apparently getting nowhere. They'll try federal mediation in Jefferson Parish in Louisiana on Tuesday.